I want to continue on this thread of physical education, because before I focused on physical education and many of the shortcomings that emerge from an educational environment. Now what I'd like to talk about is an environment that's beyond education. When we go into specialized jobs or activities or even professional sports, there's a whole different kind of physical education and development that needs to occur. The first part of physical education and development we let occur is the own natural selection. If you can't make it here, if you can't make it to pro football, or if you can't get on a college football team, or if you can't make the minimum requirements to get into the military, then we've already selected out a lot of the people that probably wouldn't be successful here anyway. But when we try to introduce a new subject matter like functional movement screening in an environment that already has an established physical culture, that's going to make waves, it's going to send ripples. Chief Brunicini from the Phoenix Fire Department embraced the fitness message and wanted his firefighters to benefit from that. But I think he realized that bringing in fitness experts to tell firefighters how to be fitter to do their job better may wind up blowing up a little bit. People like to learn from people who, number one, respect where they're coming from. So I think one of the most brilliant strokes that was ever done there is the peer fitness trainer, meaning instead of bringing trainers in, let's send a few select firefighters out to become acquainted and even educated with those things that are most important about physical development, especially from a fitness standpoint, to reduce injury and increase physical competence and independence. I've often said that, you know, an oversimplistic view of the Navy SEALs is when you go to BUDS training, basic underwater demolition SEAL training, two things that you just got to watch yourself on is don't ring the bell and don't get injured. Ask me how to do both those things. All right. Number one, don't give up. Number two, understand your limitations and function as close as you can to them. If you go beyond your limitations, make it count. You should be probably saving your life or someone else's. Otherwise, you may not finish first, but you don't need to finish last. My point is, we see more and more injuries occurring in training, occurring in exercise, which inevitably in the future is going to make people who exercise more prone to injury than people who don't. And it's going to make exercise look bad. It's going to make exercise an unnecessary risk factor when really it's the other way around. Just don't take unnecessary risk in your physical development and exercise until it counts, until it makes a difference. So, what's the best way to not get injured? Know your capabilities, push yourself, know your weaknesses, work on those. You're preventing injuries tomorrow by the work you do today. That's the whole thing. So don't give up. Don't get hurt. Saw this on a shirt at a cross-country meet. One of my buddies and I were talking about it. It said, when you start the race, don't be an idiot. And when you finish, don't be a wimp. Saying the same thing. Run the race you're meant to run. Run the race you've trained to run. Do the things you're capable of. And when it comes to those last 4 seconds or those last 4 minutes or those last 4 reps or whatever, don't be a wimp. You're already on the right path. Work as hard as you can. Now, if you reverse it and you try not being a wimp up front, and then at the end you try to become intelligent and not be an idiot and look back and see where you went off the rails, doesn't make a lot of sense. Don't be an idiot on the front end. Don't be a wimp on the back end. Back to the peer fitness trainer concept. Once we've already been through our physical education, once we're out there in the arena, out there in the employ, in the work, in the field, we want to learn how to be fit from those people who understand our specific level of fitness and the physical demands upon us. And that's where I think Chief Brunicini probably had a stroke of genius. Let's take people who know all the intangibles and teach them some of the rules of fitness, some very smart rules of fitness. I honestly think when trying to implement movement screening into athletics, it's always great to have the team captain on your side. That's happened to me in the NFL and in the NHL. When the veterans buy in, the rookies don't have a choice. If the rookies buy in too quick, the veterans don't look because they're exposed to new fads every day and they're not veterans for chasing every one of them down. So think about who you're going to pull in when you're exposing information to a group of highly competent, highly specialized, well-trained people. They would rather hear fitness information from somebody who knows what they know. Having said that, what if I were going to introduce movement screening as a physical management tool in the military? I would not have the people who do your rehabilitation administer the movement screen. That's not the context with which we want it. The same people pushing you toward physical excellence, the same people counting your pull-ups and push-ups should be the ones movement screening you. So movement is held in the same proactive light as physical fitness, not in the reactive light of physical rehabilitation. Don't do movement screens in rehab or in a rehab setting or even with rehab staff. Do movement screens with the staff that pushes physical excellence so it will be imparted both through gesture and action that movement is part of physical excellence. It's not something we worry about. We don't lift and then, oh yeah, we got to do our flexibility. Moving well before you go under load is the way it works best. So I literally think if a lot of people who've, with good intentions, introduced the movement screen with a lot of highly specialized groups, if they would take the extra time, find the leaders, find the alpha wolves, find the people who are in charge of physical excellence and who are held accountable for that. I think our penetration in the NFL probably came better through strength coaches than rehabilitation professionals. We've had a few rehabilitation professionals that had such a good rapport with the strength conditioning coach that they were able to get it through. But for the most part, the places where the movement screen is more sustainable in pro athletics is when it's embraced by the strength coach. I think it's appreciated by the rehabilitation staff, but it should not be seen as rehabilitation or a remedial effort. It should be seen as one more thing to help you become more physically excellent. I think a lot of people who ask me to come into their organization and do a seminar or work with some athletes, they always have that one person they want me to see, because if I can convince that person, if I can have penetration or create a better movement situation for that person, a better diagnosis or a better plan of attack, and I convince that person, their bidding is done. That person then, by their action and sometime by their verbal support, endorses a program, and that's all the program needs. I have found that when I go into a arena of physical excellence, whether it be athletic or tactical, they're not interested in the research projects. They're not interested in the articles or how many books I've written. They want to hear a practical, no-nonsense explanation of why this system is better than what they're doing, and how we've built in those fail safes to help them not waste time. Remember my premise. I don't think we can do physical development better than nature. I think we can do it safer and faster. You will have a hard time proving we can do it better than nature, because look how many athletes have got gold medals emerging from obscurity. They're self-trained. They didn't have the pedigree. They didn't have the university backing. They didn't have the sponsorship, and they didn't get to be a pro the other 4 years before they competed in the Olympics. They really had to overcome a bunch of unbelievable obstacles to get where they got. They made a lot of mistakes, but they learned from the mistakes quicker than the rest. And that's where I think books like The Talent Code and Talent is Overrated tell us that the talent we see in the people we'd like to emulate with our physical activity are people committed to deliberate practice, even if they don't know the term. Because the way they practice, what they bring to honing their skills, is so much more than any of us consider. Every one of us has that one thing we do pretty doggone good. And if you look at the way that you embrace and refine those talents, you'll see what other people do with physical art. You quickly see the bottlenecks to physical development when you start with movement. And you see that if people don't move well, they can't benefit from the environmental stresses because they have no other play. They can't have any adaptation because they're already in compensation. They don't get to push their physical limits. They're in compensation. So mostly they fatigue early. They don't get to spend as much time learning the skill and soon fall by the wayside and have less than optimal performance. All because their movement was inefficient. The inefficiency pointed them in a direction more toward an injury or more toward a direction of just a lack of physical development. And not many of us will stay in an environment that doesn't give us a lot of success or gives us continuous failure. Not all of us are built like Rudy. We're not just going to stay there for 4 years hoping to get a start. Most of us will move on. What is our job? Our job is not to create a situation that's going to end in big time failure 4 years from now. It's to have little sustainable lessons, failures, if you will, that you can learn from that will quickly keep you on track. Your pride, your agenda, your calendar, that may get injured, but your body won't. And nature's not nearly as easy on you as that. Nature will let you get injured if you're dumb enough to get injured. So nature will provide the variety. You provide the don't quit and don't get hurt. And I think you'll do fine. But I do think if you're trying to have a significant amount of influence on a group that you're passionate about assisting or helping, you may want to first find out who they listen to and convince that person. If you can't convince them, your defense isn't good enough, and you need to go back and do some reps on the way you build and defend your topic. And if it is good enough, let them do your bidding. They're more qualified to talk to that group than you are. I've always worked that way, and if I can't convince your team leader that I got a good idea for your team, then I don't deserve to talk to the team. I think we should both embrace that, take that challenge, work on the way we talk about that, which we do, because the end game, if we get the group screening, they're going to have a competitive advantage. They're just going to do a little bit better, and we're going to set some failures up early so we don't have to deal with them at the end when time and money have already been consumed. Don't try to educate a group. Try to educate the group's leader and then assist the group's leader wherever you can. That's all I got to say on that one.